Welcome Joanne Monfredi Dunn, who is here on behalf of Alliant, to say a few words and introduce our speaker. So welcome, Joanne. Ginger, congratulations again. I know you're going to do an awesome job.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, everyone, and Happy New Year. This is Alliant's 10th time hosting the January luncheon where Bruce is our speaker. And clearly, it's always a successful event for us to host it because Bruce does such a great job for us and has been and continues to be a real supporter of the organization, as is Alliant. The Direct Marketing Club does a lot of really good things for the industry and all the young folks we try to attract into our businesses. Quickly on Alliant, most of you know us. Many of you are clients or buying data audiences from us. Those of you who don't, we provide targeting and optimization solutions to business-to-consumer marketers. And we're really good at it, and we have a lot of proven success stories, and there's a whole lot of Alliant people in this room if you would like to know more. They would be happy to talk to you. We do have a very successful data story. In the last year or so, we launched our brand propensity models and audiences, allowing you to reach the brands your customers need to get to very effectively in any channel. There's some paperwork, I think, on the back table if you'd like to know more, and then there's all those Alliant people that will tell you, and that's it. That's all I'm going to give you. But you want to find out about our brand propensities because they work and they work well. So right before I sat down to eat, I was told I need to introduce Bruce. And then they gave me the introduction because this is good because this will keep me on the rails because I could say a lot of things about Bruce.
Please do.
All of them good. All of them good. So you all, many of you know Bruce. He is an industry veteran, seasoned executive. He is an honoree of the Silver Apple Award and the Mel Dunn Leadership Award. Bruce has served on the DMA board as well as lots of other boards. 30 years experience in building businesses ground up. He has had diverse responsibilities in his roles at the Winterberry Group and in prior businesses in strategic planning, business planning, finance, global multi-channel marketing, technology development, support, legal coordination, and financial management. What about scotch?
That's a hobby.
Okay. Bruce is the Winterberry Group Senior Managing Director, and his firm has a consulting practice and establishes, strategic and operational agendas for their clients. Bruce has a ton of clients that you all know, very reputable, well-known brands, Axiom, Apollo Global Management, Bertelsmann, Cap One, Citi, Experian, IPG, L'Oreal, KKR, KRG, Time Warner, and Alliant. And I tell you what, if you haven't worked with Bruce, you might want to think about it. So let me stop being the only thing between you and Bruce and bring him up here.
Can you hear me in the back? All right. So, Joanne, thank you very much. Ginger, thank you very much. Yeah, every year, this is year number 10, and I have seen this market. So if you think back, 2007, all bright and shiny. 2008, huge dark clouds. And then, and we've seen just about everything over the last 10 years or so. I would say this is a kind of a cloudy time. So I will kind of wander through trends. I usually start looking at trends in the middle of December so that I'm really, really well prepared as I get into early January. I went on vacation, didn't open my laptop, came back on the 3rd. So I think I've read 5,000 trends in the last 10 days. Which tells you a couple of things. It tells you there is massive fragmentation occurring in this market. There are so many things to focus on, and you can't focus on all of them. So while today's kind of a high-level survey of what's happening in the market, but there are whole things that I've basically said I don't have time to deal with anymore. Things like shift to digital media consumption. Who cares? We do it. You know, it's like, all right, it's done, it's over, we'll move on. Mobility. Mobility was a thing. Going mobile, going from desktop, it's not a thing anymore. So there are things that I think have gotten overplayed, or the market has just matured enough that it doesn't matter anymore. So I kind of cherry-picked a little bit, and that's what I'll kind of go through today. All right, and for those of you who don't know me by background, so I have been doing this for a long time. We're a management consultancy. About 40% of our work is for the supply side of the industry, working for the agencies, for the data companies, for the direct mail companies, you name it, MarTech, AdTech. Another 30% is working for brands. The other group that we work for are the financial buyers, the private equity firms, who are very, very active in our sector. And then finally, we partner with the major associations, the DMA, the ANA, the IAB, et cetera, to do sponsored research. And it allows us to gather a perspective from all of those constituencies that feed into our opinion on the market. So we are shaped by our clients as much as we are engaged to shape our clients. All right, so 2018. Everything was kind of like cruising along. You know, the first half of the year went pretty well. The second half of the year got a little dicey. We got trade wars. We got tariffs. We got a Brexit. Could be a hard Brexit, a soft Brexit, whatever that actually means. We had Facebook in the first half of the year. We had Facebook in the second half of the year. And then the government just shut down. So you kind of were cruising along. Things got a little dicey in October, you know, which is normal. We've been through, I was working on Wall Street during the 87 crash. So we've seen lots of cycles, and October always is kind of a weird month. But we fell off the edge in December. Like, we were really cruising along, and the market sort of seized up. I didn't mean marketing seized up. So there's the stock markets and there's marketing, and they're definitely running on a different track right now. So what happened for the year? We think that spend went up about 5.2%. So our market, as we track it, I'm going to get into this a little bit more because we have new models that we're using, went from 298 to 316 to 332, all sorts of new spend coming into the market, primarily in digital and data. The way we think about that is the market growing in line or not in line? So if benchmark is 2x GDP, we are slightly under GDP benchmark because GDP looks like it's going to finish around 3, maybe drop down to 2.9. As we start to think about 2019 and 2020, you know, it looks like we'll be back closer to in line than we were. I think that 2020 number, based on ad growth forecasts and GDP spend for 2020, is wrong. I don't believe the number right now. We'll see what happens when I'm doing this next year. But right now, there are just a lot of headwinds and not enough tailwinds. One of the things we did as a team at Winterberry is we sat down and we looked at how we'd been tracking the market for the last 15 years. And we had measured media, we had offline, we had digital, and we basically now have come down and say, all right, we have offline, including measured, and we have digital. So we've done a little bit of compression, because so much of what was measured media is delivered digitally, but is still considered offline. But there's a new way of looking for those people who do compare, and I've been told there are people who compare our stuff year over year. There's definitely a new methodology, but it's not too far off. So in the offline, which combines what was offline plus a lot of what was measured, we're flat. Not much changed year over year. And it wasn't that not much changed within particular segments of the market. It's just that they balanced each other out. We continue to have declines in traditional media, print, magazine, newspaper, etc. We had a decent year in direct mail, I'll talk more about that one. Linear TV lost a little bit, but it lost a little bit to addressable TV, which kind of came up. So there was this kind of a balancing act in terms of spend in this category. So neither a good year or a bad year, just a year. Direct mail, as you can see, fed right into that trend. So we track volume as well as tracking spend. And so the volumes that we saw were almost spot on. It looks great. It's a bar that looks like a year. But when you look into the quarters of that year, first half of the year in mail was actually not great. Second half was actually really strong. So we continued that trend coming from 17 of a declining market, and then all of a sudden people said, oh wait, I need that thing that works. So maybe I should go back and do some more direct mail. In the online media bucket, so we now have lots and lots of things that live in this bucket. We have moved digital radio in here, digital out of home is in here, digital video, OTT, streaming, paid social. So we kind of blew up our old display number and started to put it into its segments so that we would have a better idea. You know, search is still search, email is still kind of standalone. But all in all, if you think about all of that new money that came in, it all went here. And this sector went up about 17%. Along with that, we had a really strong year in data. So all of our models, so a lot of the data spending models that we build are built off of channel spend, either directly or indirectly. And the growth that we're seeing is in digital data spending and digital data related spending. So very, very strong again. A slight degradation in offline tied to the fact that there was not as much acquisition mail volume or growth. Email data spend, I think people are getting better at email and smarter about how they do it. So we're starting to see more data apply. At the same time, the cost, you know, of sending email has continued to decline. So while email doesn't grow as much, email data is actually growing. The other thing we took a look at the beginning of last year and through the summer was we used to attribute 100% of the cost of a marketing database to direct mail. Because almost all direct mail, all databases were primarily built to handle direct mail. And what we're seeing now is a lot more email first or digital first databases. Yes, they're in the cloud. It's not a cloud or not cloud issue. It's a digital first database. So we've started to reallocate some of our spend away from offline because the primary driver, even if budgets don't reflect it, it's the purpose of those databases is starting to shift into digital, into identity, et cetera. The rationale behind why I need this database has not declined at all. It's just the way we're starting to allocate spend has changed. All right, so some of the highlights. So direct mail, it was down, then it came back up. We're watching the comeback up right now because we think there are a couple of catalysts as we look into 2020. Paper costs are going to be up. We are going to see the impact of the tariffs with our friends to the north and the cost of paper. We are also seeing a postage increase that has come through. So between that and higher logistics costs, there are a lot of cost drivers in direct mail, some of which can be passed on, some of which cannot. It will actually drive some increased spend in direct mail, but at the same time, your per piece costs are going up. The other thing is we're starting to see consolidation trends in direct mail among the production providers come back into the market. It's the first time in a couple of years that thesis of I can roll production capacity into bigger and larger enterprises and cover East, West, and Central. We hadn't seen that. You know, it was a thesis from 10 years ago. But all of a sudden, it started to come back as the market stabilizes and people are less afraid of oh, is it going to go away? In the TV market, I think the story is OTT and streaming, and I will talk a lot more of that. Addressable TV spend, according to all of the analysts, hit $2.3 billion, which is exactly 100% right on their forecast. I think that's so good. I don't know how you actually hit it 100%, but they did. The growth is expected to keep going, but we've got constraints in terms of inventory, and we still have complexity on the buy side. Digital video ad spend up 30%. So there's this massive shift to video and video production, and whether it's on YouTube or it's on, you know, paid digital, you know, there's just a lot more money going into video. It's also going in on the production side. And then finally, we were watching the world of measurement and attribution. There were lots of articles and trends around the death of Nielsen. The death of Nielsen is overplayed. You need a standard. There is no other standard at this point. If, you know, CBS went a couple of weeks, if they had gone another few weeks, it would have been very difficult for them to be selling advertising because it is still the benchmark. So as much as ComScore is coming forward and Nielsen is challenged and you hear all of this stuff about we should have much more accurate attribution models and a better measurement system, it's not yet there. In the online world, Facebook had pain. So Facebook, 2.6 billion global accounts. I saw something that said the population of the world is forecast in 2030 to be 7.5 or 8, you know, plus billion. A third of the universe is on Facebook. However, Facebook is not just Facebook, it's also Instagram. Facebook had fraud, had hacks, had Cambridge Analytica, got dragged through the mud of Congress, dragged through the mud in Europe, and really didn't come back with a really strong response. That being said, Facebook stock is going right back up because social, and paid social specifically, is still a significantly growing channel, and there isn't quite the same number of options. But again, you have somebody like Amazon. So Amazon went from our conversation last year and the Amazonification of the world, and they were just getting into advertising and they were doing $1 billion, to all of a sudden, I think the forecast is Amazon will grab 4% of share from the duopoly. So think, if they had 61% and they're now projecting Google and Facebook at 57%, the non-triopoly stayed the same, and Google and Facebook lost share to Amazon. And they're talking about Amazon going from 4% share to 7% share and continuing to erode that Facebook-Google duopoly. The other kind of thing we were watching was influencer marketing. There was lots and lots of press all year long. There was a forecast that it was $2 billion 3 years ago. It's going to be $10 billion over the next 2 years. The forecast, of course, is from the Influencer Association who are trying to influence you. Because that would be a really spectacular jump to go from $2 billion to $10 billion. Yes, it's here to stay. Yes, we have all sorts of transparency issues. And no, I don't think we're going from $2 to $10 billion. But it is a very real thing to consider. And just think of it as sponsorship as much as anything else. And not truly advertising. Programmatic methods for executing advertising grew to about 82.5%, up from 78%. So we are becoming more and more programmatically driven across more and more channels. It's not done yet. So it's still growing, and do I think we'll ever get to 100%? No. Do I think we're getting, you know, we could see ourselves at 85, 86 over the next 24, 36 months? All the platforms that we talk to, the trade desks, the media maps, et cetera, they are all expanding the number of channels they support and making it easier for you to unify across. Technology and data costs are a pretty good chunk of that spend. So in programmatic, yes, we're going to disintermediate all of these other components so you can be more efficient, you can be faster, you can be real-time. The data technology costs are running around 25% of that, which is pretty high. And data is about 12.5%. So half of that cost is data, which means we're an even more data-driven world than we ever were before, which is also driving those data numbers that you saw on the prior slides. When we first started tracking this and building our models 5 years ago, data was 4% of an ad dollar. Wow. So it has tripled over the last 3 years, and you'd be hard-pressed to hear from somebody, yeah, I don't want any of that data. Doesn't matter, don't need it, et cetera. Brand safety improved, transparency improved, still a significant issue, and OTT, as it has grown over the top, connected TV, et cetera, streaming, all of a sudden we have fraud there. And we have a big fraud problem that's up to 20%. So it's like every time you launch a new channel, there's this game of whack-a-mole where you sit there and get the fraudsters. They're pretty fast, they're pretty dedicated, and it's pretty hard to fight them. It will always be an issue. And the question is, how does it really impact performance? You know, if you have that kind of waste. In the world of M&A, and coming from our partners over at the Petit-Pétrunier shop, Petit-Pétrunier did 34 transactions last year. It was one of their busiest years in M&A. Number of transactions and deal value for 2018 were up year over year. Lots and lots of activity in digital media and commerce, marketing technology. So we had more deal volume, more money spent, more types of buyers. In the agency segment specifically, there were 488 global transactions. And you think, all right, it's all, you know, holding companies or big consulting companies. It's actually not. A lot of it, when I look through the transaction list, there are a lot of independent companies that are buying other independent companies to gain scale and to gain capabilities and to accelerate their growth path, which is actually a very healthy thing, fueled by an availability of credit and a pretty strong market. Consulting firms still bought, you know, probably 8% of the deals and many of the bigger ones, and the financial buyers are still investing. They still believe in this market of agencies, despite what we've read about the death of the agency and everything else. The holdcos themselves, you know, half of it was focused on digital. And as you work across, you know, it varied from agency to agency. And I think there was definitely a tailing off in the second half of the year and some changes. Some of the significant transactions of the year, so we saw Martin Sorrell leave WPP, immediately start a new company within 3 months called S4 Capital, which bought Media Monks in creative production and then bought Mighty Hive, which is an in-housing. If you're not familiar with that term, we used to call this outsourcing. Firm that helps brands do their own programmatic in-house. And the theory is that there is much more need for in-housing, production source. It's not as much about the big idea as it used to be. It's a lot about execution and efficiency. That's his idea. There are others who have a completely different idea. Adobe bought Marketo. That was a pretty signature transaction. It tells us that while Neolane got them into the email game, it wasn't the game, and Marketo helped them solidify that. Salesforce said, oh, we're going a different way. We're going to be all about connectedness. MuleSoft is a company that builds the connectors for IT. So they bring that into Salesforce. Then they bought Datarama, which is a bunch of Israeli scientists who work in data management. So it's about, how do I integrate the data that is coming from all over the place so we can have a seamless experience? So it was, again, it's a thesis. Publicis Group has been buying data companies over in Europe and specifically in France. Quad Graphics bought another one of our clients called Periscope. We had done strat work for them. And they were an integrated agency. They did social, they did creative, they did brand, they had analytics. And all of a sudden you have somebody like Quad Graphics, who's a big production company, not just buying on the fringe, but buying something sizable enough that says, okay, we're in this agency game beyond lip service. AT&T, they bought AppNexus, they finished the Time Warner deal, they're launching their own, you know, cloud. So effectively, we've now got yet another walled garden. They haven't announced that they're completely walled, but Xander is starting to share data across all their platforms. So we had this, you know, a series of transactions designed to build a competitor to the walled gardens. And then you had IPG buying Acxiom to clearly state we are in this data-driven growth market seriously. They paid a good price, but it was transformative, in our opinion, for that business as much as Merkle was transformative to Dentsu 2 years before. And this year, who knows, we'll see some more changes. All right, into the trends. So, customer experience. We always talk about the customer journey. I think the word is consistency. what we're getting back from the customers that we're speaking to on the brand side is I need consistent communications. I don't just need to figure out the communication, but I need consistent communications, I need to build trust, and I need to have brand purpose. So my brand needs to stand for something. Not just making money, not just return for shareholder. And you get 75% of consumers think that the brand can increase profits and improve society, which I think is really wonderful. I'm not sure how long this stays top of mind, but it does say that we're moving beyond, brands have the opportunity to move beyond where they are and into new spaces as long as they have trust and they have consistent messaging and they start to innovate. So we're seeing a lot of focus on digital innovation and growth beyond just mapping the customer journey, beyond just personalization. Privacy is top of mind. All of the brands that we speak to, they're very concerned. But at the same time, part of this trust issue says that you can navigate the privacy issues. And I think finally, for at the brand level, it's agility. Really thinking about my marketing plan. Yes, I have a marketing plan in the fourth quarter, all for next year. But I need to have a plan that if the market changes, we need to be able to change. But we can't have like radical shifts. We, again, need that consistency of message. We're seeing a lot of push and a lot of money continuing to pour into digital transformation efforts. How do I become more digital? And it doesn't mean how do I use more digital channels? It's how do I make my products more digital? How do I extend? So think about digital in auto or digital in the home. So they're thinking about what is the digital extension of my products, not just the digital extension of my marketing because of media consumption. And of course, we still have measurement gaps. So anybody who can fix that is going to be way at the top of the pack. The next thing I thought about was I want to be able to buy anywhere and I want to be able to buy with anything. So yes, if I'm on my desktop, so desktop buying is shrinking. Digital or mobile buying on the phone or tablet increasing. Interestingly enough, buying on the phone is what is really increasing, not on the tablet. While it may not be the best device, it is still improving. The other area is voice and visual search. So all you hear about over the last probably 4 or 5 months is the rise of voice. So lots of, you know, what are the skills I need? Is it Siri? Is it Alexa? Is it Hello Google or Hey Google, whatever it is? People are looking and saying, how do I use my voice to make my life easy? And it works for some categories, and it doesn't work if you have a lot of choices. It's like, hey, you know, order this. And like, well, which of these 43 things would you like to look at? Oh, I don't. I just want to talk to you. And it's like, no, it doesn't really work that way. If I need to order my groceries, I don't have to worry about white goods that much. But, you know, maybe I do want to look. And so if I want to look, we're now talking about visual search. So show me pictures of the item, and I'll search for that. Or show me a picture that you've taken, and we can go look for that. So the ability to search, to find, to buy is changing. And while we're not quite there yet, we are going to get there really soon. There have been so many advances. There's so much money being thrown at this. And so it's not something you can avoid. The other part of this is it generates a tremendous amount of data. These sensors, all of these activities are generating more data that needs to be sorted through, and it's very unstructured. So we have to figure that out. We have to figure out what does an e-commerce platform look like that combines voice, visual, digital, desktop, and shopping in store. We're not there yet on those platforms either. And again, how do I consistently personalize across all of this? The personalization experience in the voice world is very different. The other side of voice that people separate these two is I need more connected devices. I need to be able to hear. So my devices need to be able to listen to me and filter out that it's me and not somebody else. If I say, you know, hey Google, and 40 devices in my house wake up all at once, that's not necessarily a good thing. They may be like, no, I didn't understand you. No, I'm not going to do that. You know, so, and if I'm trying to mix and match devices in my house, so we're starting to look at categories like hearables. which we used to call earphones or headphones, which is every kind of ear pod thing. So all of my hearables, and there is a definition here, I'm not going to read it to you, but anytime something starts with wireless in-ear computational earpieces, my microcomputer, that it's like, holy shit. So you go from hearables starting to exceed wearables and watches as the next big consumer device, and then you get to sleepables, things that will help you sleep better, because that is the next thing that everybody's having a problem with. So we now have sleep sensors, headbands, face masks. You know, if you start to snore, it starts to vibrate and wakes your ass up. So this is great. And of course, it's got all your biometrics tied to it. So we can now parse all this, send it through, we have more data. And then we have skin tech, which I think is very cool because it'll tell you, is your skin moist enough? Is your skin too dry? You know, should your skin look this color? It's like, so there's a whole lot of products coming out. You know, I can now get through P&G, I can get a Gillette razor that will tell me how my skin is doing as I'm shaving. And it will tell my phone that, no, he's shaving too hard, he cut his face off. So, right. So all of this is coming together. It's not just enough to be visual or voice. It's what's at the other end of these devices. And so if you're a brand and you're going, okay, this is a lot more complex than just having a skill in Alexa or a service inside of Google or Siri. You know, the connected home is a really complex place. And if I tell, you know, the fridge to reorder something and it gets it wrong, you know, so how do I check and balance all of this? But think about skills as you think about apps. If you develop them, how will somebody find them? So it goes back to what does search look like in this mix. But more data, more AI, more, you know, commerce challenges. I don't know if you have to develop all these things, but you gotta have point of view. This is kind of like when we were, you know, getting questions on mobile in 2009. It's like, well, what do I do with mobile? It's like, well, you're not gonna make any money at it right now, but you need to understand it, you need to chart a course, and you need to get there over the next couple of years. This stuff is coming at us so fast, so furious. It's not just another big TV and a big screen. It's everything in your house that can be digitally extended. They will figure out how to digitally extend it, probably in the next 2 years. And it won't always work right. But what does it mean? Some of it has marketing relevance. Some of it is completely irrelevant. But you need to think about it. Personalization. Everybody talks about personalization. I decided, yeah, personalization's okay, but it's really the decisioning that goes into personalization. Yes, I need to execute a personalized campaign. So what do I need to do downstream from an orchestration, from a channel standpoint? But if the decision that I'm making is wrong, the personalization can be wrong. So it's not just enough to personalize. You need to get far, far better at decisioning. You know, so while spend is going up, we're watching AI, we're watching cognitive computing, we're watching Watson, we are watching advances and AI coming into all of these applications. At the same time, we're watching things that were part of orchestration and delivery become headless. So a headless CMS, a headless application, is an application that doesn't have a brain. Why? Because I can't have 8 brains and actually get anything done. Because they want to have a discussion all the time and decide who's going to be right and who's going to take the data, and every one of those brains is trained differently. So if I have a headless application, it takes via API or server-to-server connection, and it starts to connect the two, but I now have one voice speaking in my head. Some of us have more than one voice. I'm just not looking at you, Joanne. But you think about what that means.
I could be that other voice in your head.
You could be the other voice.
No worries.
Yeah. It's like, you know, that advertising thing with Hugh Grant where he had the little head growing on his shoulder. But you can't have two voices. So long term, if we want consistent brand messaging and consistent experiences, what I'm going to need is I need a unified decisioning platform that can decision in real time or right time at speed. And I need that connected to a lot of downstream execution via orchestration. And those are the things that will help us have that consistent, personalized experience across all of those touch points. So we are watching this, and we're watching to see which applications will become headless, and which ones, you know, which brains are going to win. In the world of programmatic, you know, two big trends, in housing being one of them, 50% of the brands have said that they will in-house some portion. You know, 70% have said, okay, we're already on that journey. In-housing doesn't mean I'm taking everything that my agency does in programmatic media and I'm bringing in-house. What they're in-housing first is the strategy. Then they're starting to in-house execution. And that will work for some, especially scaled brands. It really doesn't work so well for mid-market brands. So there's still going to be this blend of in-source and outsource. You know what it looks like? Search. 50% of search is outsourced at any given time. It just keeps rotating around. I think we get there in the world of programmatic and in-housing, but it's pretty disruptive. At the enterprise level, what you have is the Mighty Hives, the Accentures, the Deloittes, basically saying, oh, we'll do this for you. You should in-house this. As a matter of fact, we're going to help you in-house this by putting our people in your house, so we don't have to actually pay rent anymore. And that is the classic definition of in-housing. So this is being pushed. So we're starting to see the agencies, they will get behind in-housing. It's just a function of where your bodies are going to live. Because it's not like I've got a ton of talent just sitting around waiting to be in-house. It's training. It's hard. I've spoken to friends who have some of these in-housing firms, and they said you have to grow the talent. You have to give them the experience. They're not people sitting around waiting. So there's a talent gap in the market that's pretty hard. But we are going to see a continuation of this trend, and it will work for a while. And then a new CMO will come in, so within 36 months, there'll be, maybe we should change the approach because we have more expertise out of house. And so we'll continue. So I think this cycle that we have seen consistently for 20 years continues, but right now, it's pretty disruptive. I think the other thing we've seen in programmatic is the number of DSPs that you can use for media buying needed to shrink. Yes, I still have to work with Amazon's DSP. May not be the best, but it'll get better. It's got the best data. You've got Facebook's, you know, DSP, you have Google's DSP. So as the market continues to change, I have to have those to access those walled gardens. And then I need one, max two others, because there are problems. There are problems like frequency capping. If I have four different platforms that are independent and they don't give me back enough attribution data, how do I actually cap frequency across all those platforms? I can't. So getting all of the data, figuring out the attribution. Attribution analytics is not a trend this year, it's just an issue. It still needs to be solved, it's not solved yet. But I think we still see accountability, transparency, fraud. We are getting more transparent. So I think that is, you know, year over year, it's getting better. But there are still issues in this world of programmatic. Loyalty, subscription, and experience. Tiered subscription. So if last year we started to see subscriptions like Amazon, we're now starting to see if you have this subscription level in your loyalty program and you're willing to pay X, you get this. Well, now you can pay Y. Why would you pay Y? Because it's better for you and we're going to give you more and better experiences. So we're starting to see more and more of these. We're seeing programs like Starbucks Coffee for Life. Yeah, you know, so the world of loyalty is changing and it's growing. So it's not a shrinking issue at all. It's an expanding issue. The other thing we're starting to see is the same way that tech platforms have started to fragment in the rest of the ecosystem. Here we're starting to see there are loyalty-based CDPs, and I'm going to talk about CDPs in a second. So we're seeing more of that. Video and advanced TV. I'll go very quickly into this. It's about streaming. So we have Disney Plus launching. We have new programming coming from Apple. CBS is looking at theirs. Roku has a channel. Xandar from AT&T. So you will have lots and lots of streams and lots of OT&T and lots of ad associated with it. I think eventually we have too many streams. How many subscriptions do you really want to have? But everybody, you know, this is becoming a very, very competitive space. It's no longer just a Netflix space. So we are watching OTT probably more than anything else. And it's a little bit cleaner, even though it's got a bunch of fraud. It's certainly still cleaner than say, a YouTube and some of the social video channels. In the world of data, identity solutions. So last summer we did a big identity study. You know, when we think about identity, just to quickly define, it's the ingestion of components, it's the management of that data, it's that cleaning, hygiene process, it's the resolution so that I can do that linking and matching, so I can create a profile that represents a person with all of its devices associated with it, which I can output into an identity graph. The graph is what counts. Resolution is a process or a service. Ingestion is technology and services. But it's that graph of profiles and how accurate that graph is that matters. And then I can start to activate. And in the walled gardens, they have massive graphs. We're starting to see some of our enterprise clients are starting to build their own graphs. I also think we're going to see waterfalling. So if you were just working with one provider and that provider gave you 50 or 60% coverage, that extra 10%, 15% coverage is 15% more recognition, which is 15% more better experiences. So as we start to think about where does identity go, you know, there was tradition, you know, the traditional walled garden applications, there was programmatic media, email personalization, location-based targeting, even offline targeting. But I think as we look forward, right now, personalization on owned properties and in that middle funnel, so at the point of conversion on your website, in your app, being able to do a better job of identifying those who have not authenticated yet becomes increasingly important. Once they authenticate, you have another set of opportunities, but we're really watching that mid-funnel pre-authentication where the most value is being created, not necessarily at the very top of identity. We see the market. It grew last year. It seemed to have sit pretty close to what our forecasts were. We look at this as about a $2.6 billion market going forward over the next couple of years. There is a lot of focus, and there are a lot of people say, oh, this isn't that hard. Except if it wasn't that hard, just in onboarding, there are five players. If it was easy, there would be a lot more people doing this. Building a truth set, getting all that data, integrating that data, doing resolution, being accurate, being deterministic, and also adding probabilistic, and then being able to integrate this for brands. So while the data integration, you know, at the highest level is happening, being able to build this out as a service for the brands is not easy. And we're just, I think we're really at the beginning of that process for identity. But it's going to grow, it's going to continue to mature. In the EdTech, MarTech space, no slowdown. You know, Scott Brinker and Chief MarTech, there are almost 7,000 companies. I saw somebody, like Raggy Thomas from Sprinklr this morning, said 80%, 90% will be consolidated and fail and go away. All right, I don't believe that. Because we're still seeing for everyone born, for everyone that consolidates, two more are born. We're not seeing a backing off. As a matter of fact, we saw accelerated investment in the financial community last year. We saw big deals, which continues to create promise. AI, CDPs, voice, connectivity. There's no way 90% of this market goes away. So it's a point that I disagree with. But where are we focused? So one of the areas we're focused on right now is customer data platforms. We are in the middle of a study to actually better define what this is. So we have a definition. It's a database of customer profiles. It starts with PII. It is not a marketer-first system. It is not something you can install without IT. If you think somebody comes up to you and says, oh, I can get this turned on in 30 days, not with your data and not with something that's going to work. So the reality is it's very complex. It's data ingestion. It's not necessarily a customer database. At the enterprise level, what we're seeing is these CDPs are hanging off because they are real-time applications, or they are identity resolution products, or they are loyalty extensions. They are not necessarily the marketing database. They are complementary to it. In the mid-market, what we found is they actually are a lot more, they're being used as a customer database because good enough sometimes works. So it's the integration, it's the activation, it's the hygiene. What's optional here and depends on the flavor of CDP is activation and orchestration, what they're doing on that decisioning side, as well as the analytics and AI. Some have it, some don't. So it kind of falls into four buckets, and the white paper, I'm thinking probably 3 weeks out. Data management, analytics-centric, data processing, identity resolution-centric, and application-centric. We're going to break it into four buckets and try to make sense of the 90-plus things that are being called CDPs. My favorite quote was one of the more application-centric ones. So basically, in order to get included in an RFP, since people don't know, they put everything under a CDP header. And if you want to be in the RFP, you have to call yourself a CDP, even if that's not what you want to be. So there's enough confusion in the marketplace that needs to be sorted out. But if you think you can ignore this and you're in the data world, you cannot ignore this. This is going to be very much part of it. Just don't think it is the panacea for all marketing database stuff. It is not an enterprise database, and it will not be one, nor do the people doing this think they want to be one. Oh, and by the way, you should have a system integrator to help you put it in. In the agency world, it's not just about in-housing. It's about agency transformation as well. So we are starting to see the agencies consolidate their networks. We are starting to see agencies being created in-house. So there is a lot going on in agency beyond in-housing. You know, changes at every single one of the holdcos. So as you think about, you know, the marketers, the brands are still using multiple agencies. The agencies themselves have realized that the consultancies, with their ability to do end-to-end, to go from strategy all the way through execution, that they and do it with a single brand. I was with a friend of mine who used to be at Omnicom, and he said, you know, when you work for two customers, you have a conflict of interest. When you work for three, you're a specialty. So there's a lot less conflict of interest being perceived in the market because of the breadth of the market. They're also turning to data to drive growth. Obviously, I talked about Acxiom and IPG, but it's well beyond that. We're starting to see consolidation inside the holding companies. You look at somebody like Omnicom and their precision marketing group, and it's RAP, and it's target based, and it's critical mass. So they're bringing those capabilities together to get more data-centric. WPP inside of Wunderman has consolidated things. So we're seeing more and more of this at the holding company and even inside of the smaller networks. You know, we saw an announcement of PMX, Chris Paradise's shop, just merged with Digital Forward, a global firm, to create an agency, more data-centric, more global coverage, so more of that end-to-end. So we expect more of that as we continue this year. Privacy, yes. Still an issue. California is a mess. Marco Rubio, I think, put something out today, you know, pushing forward, you know, that we need some, you know, better national regulation. 50 states, I was talking to Joe Ambie before, 50 states look and go, we can make a lot of money doing this. This is going to be a real nightmare for marketers if we have each state with its own set of privacy regulations. And we need to solve for this. And if anybody asks you to help, you need to work on this, because this is a big issue that could cause significant amounts of pain. Or we could all go back to just watching TV. It is that bad. And then, of course, you get somebody like Tim Cook who's saying, no, maybe there should be this centralized data broker repository. I think we've heard this before. And, of course, Apple's agenda is, all right, we already have all the data. And we're not going to let anybody else have data. So nobody should have data except for us so that we can do a better job. The walled gardens are not anybody's friend in this. As far as we can tell, their agenda is we've already got the data, and if you want to play in our garden, that's okay. We control all the data. And if you as a consumer don't want to play, you can opt out. But you're not really going to get the benefit of those services. So it behooves them to have a fragmented landscape that they can navigate. So watch, this is one of the hot button issues of the year. More investment in M&A, more growth, more value. You know, we're not seeing anything right now that says anybody's taking their foot off the pedal. The deal volumes are continuing to grow. There will be bigger deals. There will be more challenging deals. There will be more transformative deals. You know, ADS has announced they're putting Epsilon on the market. MDC has announced that they are up for sale. So there are, you know, almost everything is up for grabs, and nobody seems to be slowing down while the economy continues to do well. I think if we see ourselves move towards a recessionary environment in the back half of the year, I think things start to change. All right, finally, outlook. We think that this will be a good year, assuming we get past the shutdown, we get over Trump, we deal with China, we deal with Mr. Mueller, we deal with Congress, we deal with Brexit. So it's all, you know, it's all clear. So this is the cloudiest forecast I've had in 10 years because there are so many contributing factors to uncertainty. And it's one of the reasons why we've seen the stock market go down 10%, come back up, because nobody knows. You got forecasts yesterday. Jamie Dimon says we're headed towards a recession over, you know, from Chase. Brian Moynihan over at Bank of America said all blue skies. This is the same day. What tea leaves are they each reading? Everybody's got their own leaves. And it is dependent. So if we solve the shutdown and it doesn't go too much further, Q1 will be fine. If Trump doesn't implode or do something really even more crazy, if we settle and deal with the China tariffs. So there are a lot of things that will bring back stability like that. And there are a lot of things that the longer they persist, the more they erode confidence. And it will erode confidence in the growth of this market. We think that offline stays flattish again. Still, you know, some sectors up, some sectors down. Continued decline of print. It's just very, very hard to challenge a systemic decline. Digital will be up. Not up as much because, it, you know, the law of large numbers is taking hold, but new money that's coming in is still going there. Data continuing to go up. We see good, solid growth across the market. But obviously, it needs the other channels to grow because they consume the data. So we're watching it. But right now, you know, so far, assuming none of those bad things happen, we're pretty comfortable. And as you can see, over the last couple of years, that share of online just continues to creep up. No matter how many ways we consolidate the offline to get that number bigger, yeah, you know, we have no more channels we can add in there anymore. So digital will continue to go, and it's half, and it will, you know, continue to creep up. But anyway, so those are thoughts of the year to get us started. It is not comprehensive. It is not everything. There are trends that were left on the cutting room floor, but it's about as what I could get through in an hour and 5 minutes.